This is the Walking Home from the ICU podcast. I'm Kelly Dayton, a nurse practitioner and ICU consultant. I help teams create awake and walking ICUs through evidence-based sedation and mobility practices. By hearing from survivors, clinicians, and researchers, we'll explore how to give ICU patients the best chance to walk out of the ICU and go home to survive and thrive. Welcome to the ICU Revolution. Mackenzie, thank you so much for being with us on the show. Tell us a little bit about your experience or your early nursing career before going to New York.
Okay, so I started as a nurse on a step-down, an ICU step-down floor, which was a great experience. And then my first experience as an ICU nurse before I went to New York was in an ICU where patients are awake and they walk and work with physical therapy on the ventilators. So that's kind of my background before going to New York.
So then after that experience, what was it like to be thrown into one of the worst COVID-19 hotspots in the world?
It was insanity. Just completely different than everything I knew. It almost feels like it kind of goes against everything I was taught to do as a nurse and what I felt like I should be doing for my patients as a nurse. So it was really hard. It was a hard adjustment to go there, definitely. But yeah, it was just, people describe it on social media as like a war zone, or the group of people I was there with called it cowboy medicine. And it actually fits. Like, that's really what it felt like.
Yeah, and last episode, Dr. Harris talked about the difficulties in staffing ratios in the hospital she was at. Nursing care was 4 patients on ventilators, sometimes CRRT machines on top of that, to 1 nurse. What were the staffing ratios like for you? And at what point did you come in to that hospital?
So when we got there to the hospital we were at, the administrators were saying that we were kind of at the tail end of it, that things were starting to slow down, which almost seemed comical just with the like level of patients that they still had and how things were functioning. I was lucky enough to be in a hospital where the ICU ratios were still 2-to-1-ish. I know there were other people that I went out there with that were at different hospital systems and their ratios were higher, like 5-to-1. Wow. In the ICU. But where I was, we were 2-to-1. And if we had a third patient, they would give you an extra nurse, like a step down nurse to help you. But they were still inappropriate loads. You would have multiple patients on CRRT, which back where I work is a 1-to-1 load, or ECMO patients in 2-to-1 loads, so which seems really, really unsafe. So there were still things like that that made the ratios harder. And yeah.
And what did you see were the impacts to patient care because of those loads? Or just because of the crazy acuities of the patients and the crazy situation that it was, what kind of impact did that have to patient care?
Patient care suffered severely due to the situation there. I've never seen patients being cared for that way. I'm lucky to work where I do and have all the resources here that I do, but that was probably one of the most shocking things, was just the state that these patients were in. And I don't think that it was malicious or anything like that. I think those nurses in New York are amazing and they're doing the best they can, but those patients suffered. All my patients had bed sores. All of their mouths were like bleeding or pussy just due to lack of oral care. They weren't getting turned or repositioned. They weren't moving at all. Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. It's really an awful thing to say, but most of my patients, I felt like I was just taking care of corpses or like zombies is what they felt like.
And I've heard nurses say that, and that must be so traumatizing for everyone. And so I'm in awe of these amazing providers that
have stuck it out there, that have been there for 7+ weeks or however long, mm-hmm. hardly any days off, and doing that day in and day out. And so none of this is against any nurses. And if anything, it's just an awe of those that have stuck with it for so long, because it's been hard mm-hmm. to keep staff healthy or able to endure all of that kind of hardship. But it is important to recognize what happens to patient care and patient outcomes. You know, you came into a situation where, especially in New York, when things hit, the talk in the ICU community was to intubate after 6 liters nasal cannula, which automatically meant, because of our sedation cultures and the desperation of the situation there, that these patients, after 6 liters, were being deeply sedated and immobilized right after needing 6 liters nasal cannula. So you came in however long after to see the effects of that kind of practice and the care. And what did you see as for patient outcomes?
They were poor. When I was in New York, they had been dealing with this for 6 weeks. That was kind of the time frame. And all of the patients I took care of had been intubated for at least 3 weeks. So I didn't have any new patients. They'd all been there. They were established in the ICU, I guess. They were well known. But yeah, so they'd been there for 3 weeks, still on sedation, still on Versed and Presidex, lots of Versed drips, actually. Yeah, so they were still sedated after 3 weeks and not moving. The most I had a patient move was just their right hand. They could lift their right hand, and that was it. No one was really restrained because they just couldn't move. They weren't going to go for their tube because they were so deconditioned and delirious. None of them could interact with me. I had one patient that would open his eyes when I talked to him. So that was really hard. But yeah, that was the most interaction I had with a patient the whole time I was out there.
So at that point, after 3 weeks, their lungs are getting better, most of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, everyone was really on minimal vent settings. They were on 40% and like 5 of PEEP. And that's their minimum. Like, they don't go lower than 40 uh-huh. there. But no one was getting extubated just because they were so weak that they wouldn't be able to protect their airway. They can't even lift their head. So they weren't getting extubated. They weren't weaning ventilators. Patients were, you know, hyperoxygenated at this point.
And you mentioned a blood gas of...
Yeah, so I had a patient who I drew a blood gas on, ran it. The PaO2 was 300. And I showed it to the NP there. I was like, hey, here's this blood gas. And she was like, amazing. And was like showing it to people. She said, look how great my girl's gas is. Look how good it is. And I was just like, 300 here. If we have a blood gas that's like 80, they're like, wean down.
Let's get it moving.
If you've been listening to this podcast, you're likely convinced that sedation and mobility practices in the ICU need to change. The ICU community is facing incredible difficulty with the trauma from the pandemic, staffing crisis, and burnout. We cannot afford to continue practices that result in poor patient outcomes, more time in the ICU, higher healthcare costs, and greater workload for the ICU team. Yet the prospect of changing decades of beliefs, practices, and culture across all disciplines of the ICU is a daunting task. How does this transformation start? It can begin with a consultation with me to discuss your team's current practices, barriers, and to formulate a plan to help your ICU become an awake and walking ICU. I help teams master the ABCDEF bundle through education, consulting, simulation training, and bedside support. Let's work together to move your team into the future of evidence-based ICU care. Click the link in the show notes of this episode to find out more.
Yeah, so they weren't weaning the ventilators, which I think was a big problem why they couldn't get them off. And then after 3 weeks of this, of being deeply sedated, being intubated, they would just be like, well, let's trach them without even trying to get them off.
And so no physical therapy on them. No one was trying to move them. And you said that they had been sedated, but sedation was coming off at that point.
Yeah. So I didn't see a physical therapist work with any of my patients the whole 2 weeks I was there until the last day. So that was the only physical therapist I saw. And I was like, amazing. Thank you so much for trying to work with my patient. But yeah, so that was the one time I saw a physical therapist. I had a lot of patients that we had weaned off of sedation that still had just delirium, that weren't waking up, weren't arousable, and they weren't on sedation at that point. So,
and that can go on for a long time. And then what happens after they get trached?
They try and send them out of the hospital to like an LTAC. I think they were trying to make a floor in the hospital that where they could send these patients that didn't need ICU care anymore, like a step down that could take these stable trach patients. But yeah, they were trying to send them to LTACs. I did have a patient they were trying to transfer that had gotten trached, but they were just facing like back and forth with the facilities because they didn't want to take patients who were still testing positive for COVID, which my patient was still positive after 3 weeks after getting trached. So yeah, it was just kind of up in the air about where they were going to go.
So with no physical therapy coming and, you know, mobilizing patients isn't necessarily an ICU skill set for most nurses. We, as ICU nurses, generally titrate drips, turn, suction, do those things. But moving an adult newborn, a 200-pound, floppy, weak, debilitated newborn is not in most nurses' skill set. So these patients were just waiting to move on to rehab at some point if they woke up and were qualified to go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they would have ever gotten back to the quality of life they had before just because of how deconditioned they were. And then with a trach, a lot of these patients that had been trached were still on trach vents. So they were still needing to be ventilated. And I don't know, they would go somewhere where they would never get the rehab that they needed because no one would be able to move them.
So what has this taught you, or how has this impacted your perspective and your practice as a nurse moving forward?
I feel like my biggest takeaway from this is just the importance of nursing care and mobility and our patients. In nursing school, my instructors, I remember they would always tell me how important it was that I get my patients up and walk them, and that I turn them every 2 hours so they don't get sore, and nutrition so they can heal. And those are all things that we know, but in the ICU, normally those things are at the bottom of my list of things to do because, you know, airway, breathing, circulation, the important thing is to manage the drips, make sure they maintain their airway. Anyways, especially in a crisis situation like it was in New York, those things literally did not matter. They were not doing any of those things. And so I've seen with my own eyes what happens to patients when they aren't receiving nursing care and they don't get better. No matter what the physicians are ordering, it's may or may not be reaching the patient because of nursing care, and that's what's making the biggest difference. Here I'm used to my patients getting up and walking, but there I really saw the detrimental effects of no mobilization in the ICU.
And sometimes that's the biggest way to learn, is to see the complete opposite and to such an extreme that I hope that the rest of the country doesn't imitate or doesn't have to reach. Hopefully we can continue our good practices, but especially with our sedation and mobility, we've been so worried about this being a different virus that a lot of our discussions have forgotten or excused the basics that we know get people better and give them quality of life. How have you seen, now that you're back, the outcomes be different with our, even our COVID patients?
I might cry when I talk about this. We had a COVID patient that was here for a long time. He was COVID positive, was intubated, at one point sedated and paralyzed. And I took care of him before I left for New York. He was on high ventilator settings. He was sick, needed a lot of support. Anyways, after working a few shifts in New York, I really wanted to come home. And I had a day off. I remember sitting in my hotel room and I was checking my work email, and I had gotten an email from you about this COVID patient that we had all had all taken care of throughout the weeks, talking about how he discharged home and how he walked out of the hospital. I literally sat in my hotel room just crying, because it made me so happy to know that I work in a place where we help patients get better. And I didn't feel like I was helping patients get better in New York. I felt like I was just prolonging their sickness. Like I was just trying to get them through the next 12 hours. But here, with the limited sedation and early mobility that we focus on, we really help patients retain their quality of life. And so hearing about that while I was gone kind of put it in perspective and helped me realize kind of what got me through my last 2 weeks, is just thinking about that, and that if I could just do one thing for my patients every day that I knew wasn't getting done, whether it be oral care every 2 hours or making sure I turned them, that it would be worth it because it wasn't getting done without me. So yeah, that kind of changed my experience, and it's definitely changed my opinion on sedation in the ICU.
We need your voice, Mackenzie. You are going to do so much good for our ICU community, and especially and even in our unit. Thank you so much for sharing all of this and for going into that kind of battle zone and doing your best. And you should be proud of everything that you've done and will yet do. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you want to join in on the conversation, leave a voicemail at 801-784-0472 or reach out to me on Twitter. Schedule a consultation for your ICU, as well as find supportive resources such as the free ebook, case studies, episode citations, and transcripts, please check out the website www.daytonicuconsulting.com.